imagine if you're the wisest man in the world and you're looking at everybody else and you're saying, we end up in the same place. I got all of this stuff and I got all of this wisdom that they don't have and we both end up exactly the same. But here's the difference. I've got a lot of stuff and I don't get to keep it. I've got amassed all this stuff, and I want you to notice this in verse 17, how he felt about his life. I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous, and there's our word, evil to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. When he examined life, he hated it. Because life by itself and the pursuits thereof don't give anything. So here's what I'll do, he said. I hated, and notice now what he specifically begins to hate. I hate, verse 18, the fruit of my labor. I've worked for all of this, and the product that I get back, I now hate it. And why does he hate it? For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Problem number one is I've got it and I have to leave it behind. But here's problem number two. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control or he'll have dominion over all the fruit of my labor. For which I have labored by acting so wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Not only do I have to give it away, who knows how the guy after me is going to use it? He might be a fool and he might squander it. I still got to leave it to him. And how did I get it? I used my hands. I work for this. And don't we say stuff like that? I work for this with my own two hands. And I use my wisdom. And now somebody else gets to reap the benefits of that. You ever found yourself in that situation? I work so hard for this, and somebody else will get to enjoy it. It's kind of messed up, isn't it? But notice verse 21. So when there's a man who has all of this wisdom, he now despaired of life, verse 20. He hated it before. Now he's ready to give it up, verse 20. It's all vanity. Because verse 21, when there's a man who has labored with wisdom and knowledge and skill, that would be me, and he gives his legacy or he gives his share to the one who has not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. He didn't do a thing to get this. But yet I still got to give it to him. Why get it all? Why do all of this? So what does he get out of this? He's like, I don't get my stuff. I don't get enjoyment. What do I get out of this? Notice what he gets, verse 22. What does a man get in all his labor and his striving with which he labors under the sun? He gets pain and he gets grief and even at night his heart does not rest. This too is vanity. He gets angry. He gets sorrows. He gets anxiety because he's so worried about his stuff. He doesn't even sit back and he enjoys it. If that's you, it's futile. All of the hard work that you're putting in with all your might is pointless. What's the solution? Verse 24. You have to make yourself see. verse 24. There's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. Some of your translations will say, find enjoyment. And the idea is you have to make yourself see that your labor is good. Your labor has a point. And you know what the point is? God gives you several things. Notice what God gives you, verse 24. This I have seen is from the hand of God. What did he see is from the hand of God? The eating and the drinking of those things. The finding of the enjoyment comes from God. But what else comes for it? Because verse 25, who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? Don't you see that you're able to work? Don't you see that you have the ability to work and to do these things? Why can you do that? God's given you that ability. And God's given you the ability to enjoy that, to eat and to drink and to find that. And can you have enjoyment without Him? Not a lasting, not a fulfilling enjoyment, but He gives that to you. And notice what else He gives you, verse 26. For to a person who is good in his sight, He gives you wisdom, knowledge, and joy. You get to, you remember all that stuff you used to get all your stuff? He gave that to you. But notice what else you get. You get the sinner's stuff. You get the fruit of his labor because he's given the sinner the task, the job of gathering and collecting so that he may give it to the one who's pleasing in his sight. So you may ask yourself, am I gathering all the stuff and collecting all my stuff and I'm giving it to somebody else? Or am I getting and reaping the benefits of somebody else's stuff? And the truth is, we ought to be reaping the benefits of God's stuff that He's given to us, the wisdom, the knowledge, the ability to work, and all of those things that all the people who are out there striving and working as hard as they can in the rat race, and they're not enjoying it, reaping those benefits as well. But guess what we normally feel? Not the enjoyment, not the satisfaction, if we're only thinking about those things. You don't think about God, and you don't think about God in your work, you will not find joy in your work. You will hate your work. Don't find yourself in that position. What is position number two? Go to chapter 5. Chapter 5, you might find yourself in this position. You love money. And you would say, man, I love money. I love having money. I love spending money. I love saving money. I love money. Now verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. Nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. You might be saying, man, I love money. And you're getting all this money. But guess what? You're not going to be satisfied with the amount of money that you have. You always got to give more. You always got to give more because it doesn't fill you up. Because you love the wrong things. So you know what this guy gets? He gets all this money, right? And so you got to ask yourself the question, what's he get? He loves money. He gets money. But he ain't full. Notice what he gets, verse 11. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. He gets all this, and guess what? He gets moochers. He's got people who is using his stuff. And you know what else he gets? Notice the next phrase. So what is the advantage to the owners? Except to look on. Except to watch it. Guess what he gets? He gets to watch other people use his stuff. He's like, man, I love this stuff and I ain't even getting to use it. All these people are now using it. Because he's so focused on the stuff. Well, that ain't all he gets. Verse 12, the man who works, the sleep of the working man is pleasant. Whether he eats little or much, he's worked hard and he's got a little, he sleeps good. He works hard, he's got a lot, he sleeps good. But to the full stomach, the guy who's got all of these things, but he's not satisfied, he's full of the rich man, it does not allow him to sleep. He's stuffed. He can't get any more money. But yet, he's missing an essential part of life. And if you've ever gone days without sleep, and I don't think he's literally talking about you lose sleep over it. But if you've ever gone days without sleep, how well are you functioning? Not very well, are you? You're limited in capacity, and you just want to give up. So verse 13, here's our word again. There is a grievous evil. And your word there, grievous, is sickening. It makes me sick to my stomach. And what is that? The riches are being hoarded or guarded by their owner to his hurt. He loves his stuff so much that he is doing his best to guard it, to keep all of these people from using his stuff. And he's protecting it as best he can. But surprise, surprise, what's going to happen to his stuff? Verse 14, so when those riches are lost through a bad investment or through literally an evil task, what happens? He has a son, yet there's no one there to give him a hand, is the idea. He has nothing. He lost it all. And guess what? That's just the way man was, verse 15. He came naked from his mother's womb, and so he will return. He'll take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry on his hand. And this also is a grievous evil. Because exactly as man is born, thus he will die. You try to protect all your money because you're so worried about it, you lose it. You try to take it with you, you can't. You came naked, you're leaving naked. That is life. Man, that seems pointless, doesn't it? Sickening. I've worked so hard, and I don't get to do anything with it. So what does he get? He's done all this labor. What's this man get? What does he get for all this work? Verse 17. Throughout his life, he eats in darkness. With great vexation, sickness, and anger. Your word vexation there, he is provoked to anger. The little stuff makes him so angry. He gets sick about all this. And he's always at strife. He's always in anger. Because his labor is in vain. So what's the solution? Surprise, surprise, verse 18. Here's what I've seen to be good and beautiful, fitting, is to eat and drink and make oneself seek all one's labor in which he toils under the sun, the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Same situation. Make yourself see that your labor is good. Because notice what he enumerates God gives you here. God gives you life. A few years. Without God in your life, He sums up your life as a futile life. It's pointless. But He gives you those few years of life. Notice verse 19, what else He gives. He gives man riches and wealth. The stuff that you have. The money that you love. He gave that to you. And in verse, the next statement, and He empowers him to eat from them and to receive this reward and rejoice in his labor. Again, you're able to rejoice because you have Him. And then the next verse, verse 20. For He will not often remember or consider the years of His life. Kind of like how pointless His life is. He's not going to be so concerned about that. Why? Because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. This dude is just so joyful and he's so glad that he doesn't even consider how thoughtless and how pointless he felt his life used to be. Because God has him so occupied. He's so focused on God. The money doesn't mean anything anymore. They're there and thankful for them. But they're not the end-all, be-all. Third situation is also very similar to this. Chapter 6 and verse 1. There's an evil which I've seen under the sun, and it's prevalent among men. I've seen this a lot. What is it that you've seen? A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, and his soul lacks nothing that he desires. Our third situation is, you have every single thing that you could possibly want. That seems like a good spot, doesn't it? But notice the caveat for some. But God has not empowered him to eat from them. For a foreigner or a stranger eats from them. You've got everything that you could want. Yet for some reason, God doesn't allow you to enjoy them. Somebody else is reaping the benefits of all your labor and all your work and all the rewards in which God has given you. You say, well, how's that possible? How does that happen? Well, notice verse 3. If a man fathers 100 kids, that would be, and he lives many years, however that many be, you pick a number. He has a lot of children, says 100. I don't know how many of you would want 100 kids, but you got all the kids you want. You live all the years that you want. And notice what he says. But his soul is not satisfied with good things. Here's the problem with this guy. He has all these great things right in his grasp. He's got the children. He has the riches. He has the long life. Yet he doesn't appreciate them. He doesn't enjoy them. And so guess what Solomon says about that guy? And we would look at him as a poor soul. Solomon says, this is who's better than him, verse 3. Better is the miscarriage than he. For it comes in futility, and it goes into obscurity, and its name is covered in obscurity. The child that is lost at birth, it never knew this world. No one ever really even knew it. It came into the world not being known. It exited the world not being known, but by just a few people. And it's better off than this guy who comes into the world and he brings 100 more in. And he comes into the world and he spends as many years as he wants. But verse 6, he lives 1,000 years twice over. We got a dude who's been alive since the days of Jesus. And he's living today. See how absurd that is? We would say, man, you're so lucky. How in the world? I hate life. Why? Because he does not know how to enjoy good things. Do not all go to one place. Eventually, his time is going to run out. It's going to happen. You will lose it. That is the way it is. And so whether you're wise or whether you're a fool, what's the point? He would point out again, what's the advantage? The fool knows how to walk in the living. But notice verse 10. What does this guy get out of all this? What's he get? Whatever exists has already been named, and it's known what man is. Here's what man is from beginning to end. This is what it is. This is how it will be. And there's nothing you can do about it. Here's what you get. He cannot dispute with him who is stronger than he is. For there are many words which increase futility. You know what you get out of all this? A fight that you cannot win. You want to go to God and you want to complain about life being evil and life being unfair? You go right ahead. But he's mightier than me. He's stronger than me. You cannot win it. And you can utter as many words as you want, but every single word that you utter is increasing in futility. Don't fight with him about this. And then notice the second thing he gets. So what's the advantage to a man? Alright, so I get a fight I'm going to lose. What's the advantage? Who knows what is good for a man during his lifetime? The few years of his feudal life. Who do you think knows that? God knows that. He will spend them like a shadow. For who can tell a man what will be after him under the sun? You know what else? He gets a future that he cannot know. He started out being so worried. I got all this stuff, then I got to leave it behind. And I don't know what's going to happen to my stuff. I don't know if my son is going to be a fool or my son is going to be wise. I don't know. And then all this stuff is going to be, you just see him. He's all worked up over it. Can't sleep at night worrying about his stuff. And what's my kid going to be like? And all that. Yeah. And like on top of it. God, I'm so mad at you because, man, I got to give up all this stuff. Can't take it with me. My kid's an idiot and all. What do you get out of it all? You got no idea what's going to happen. You don't know when your life is going to be taken. That's the end of chapter 9. Whatever your hand finds to do, do with all your might. You're going to the grave. And guess what? The race is not always to the swift. And the battle is not always to the strong. But time and chance happened through them all. Like a bird who gets caught in a snare. It didn't know it was going to happen. But it got caught. And it died. The strong went into battle thinking he was going to win because he's the strongest. But life doesn't work out the way we always think it should. I got all this good stuff. But I don't enjoy it. So I think chapter 7 may be the answer. He doesn't say as the same thing in chapter 2, I've seen what's good and fitting. In chapter 5, here's what's good and beautiful. But notice the very first words of chapter 7. A good name is to be chosen rather than precious ointments. What he has to do is he has to make him see the better things, the good things in life. And chapter 7 is filled with at least seven betters. And I'll point out just four. The good name, son. You worry more about your name than being able to afford the best smelling and the most expensive perfume. you worry about your name. Son, it's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. Because the living will lay it to heart. Because this is the end of all mankind. Life is not about the party. Life is about realizing my life will end. Thirdly, it's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than the song of the fool. The song of the fool may sound better. It may go down easier. But what is better is to hear that rebuke. And then I want you to read verse 13 and 14. So consider the work of God. Consider what God has done. Who's able to straighten what He has bent? Can you change what God has made crooked? No. So in the day of prosperity, who gave you that prosperity? God. In the day of prosperity, be happy. In the day of adversity, do what? Consider. God has made the one as well as the other. Why did He do that? Because He has a plan so that man can't figure out what will come in or after. Don't forget, God has a plan. Find it. So when you're in your work and you're laboring as hard as you can, make yourself see God in your labor. If you don't, all your hard work will be pointless. Don't forget God. This morning has not been about becoming a Christian. It's been about how to live as a Christian. And how to appreciate what God has given us. Let's be a grateful and thankful people who, when people look at our lives, they aren't sick at what's happened to us. But man, that person gets it. They know it. They're not working for naught, but for a reason. You're subject to the invitation and need the prayers this morning. We ask you to come now as we stand and as we sing.